This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. But I am not driving home from work today because it is January 1st. It is New Year's Day, 2016. And as you might be able to tell, my voice is shot. I've been sick all week. I'm on the road to recovery. Haven't quite made it there yet, but we're getting there. It's been a fascinating week. Maybe I'll tell you more about that next week, but for this week we have a special podcast. Special edition of the podcast because, in fact, it is January 1st, 2016, and I have just taken my beloved and Liz and Alan to see Star Wars The Force Awakens. So I'm in the process of picking them up right now. I've told them they can't talk to each other about it yet until they get in the car. Gotta get in the car, and we're gonna talk about it. So, they're getting in the car. I know, sorry about the manual door. So, yeah, we're all sick. So, okay. So, you saw Star Trek The Force Awakens.
We've got a door open
somewhere. Door open. Somebody's door is open. Yep. Okay. Liz and Alan have a van that the door's actually, like, closed by themselves. It's very, very nice. So, we're going to talk about Star Force Awakens.
I have to run to the church as well.
Okay, well, we can do that.
Stop in and say hey to Danny.
Oh, is he the guy who's taking down the arch?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. All right, so what'd you think?
I am struck only by the futility of it all.
Why? What?
The good guys are never winning.
Oh, yeah.
You know, they're always scrapping to try to... Kick him in the shin.
Well, but that is J.J. Abrams recapturing the original Star Wars. You know, in the first ones, that's not what it was. 1, 2, and 3. And so, in order to recapture the whole, you know, je ne sais quoi of Star Wars,
I leaned over to Dad as she's climbing stairs, and I said, Star Trek wouldn't put up with this. Just transport right there.
Transport right to the thing. So one of the things that struck me when I saw it for the first time, because this is my second time to see it, I have to say it's better the second time.
Yeah?
Yeah. Lowered expectations. Oh. But one of the things that struck me when I saw it the first time was that nobody clapped at the end. You know, usually you go to a Star Wars movie and it's like...
Well, but there's no big release at the end.
No.
You're left with a big question mark.
By the way, there's going to be major spoilers on this, okay? Because we're just going to talk about the movie. So if you haven't seen it yet and you happen to be one of the three people that actually listens to this podcast, you need to stop this right now until you actually go and see the movie. Okay, fair warning. There we go. Okay, but overall... So... Your point, though, Liz, is that the good guys never win. What is it that
you know, the bad guys always seem to be in the position of authority and power with better weapons and better supplied, and they're more funded, and they're, you know. So it's like, well, work.
I don't understand,
like, they didn't really, I felt like, maybe I missed it, I didn't feel like I really understood, okay, so, at the end of 6, good guys have won.
Yes.
We're gonna be, the Senate's gonna be great.
The new Republic's
gonna be powerful.
Gonna be great.
And then all we've got is that now we've got First Order is here now. And they're well established and well funded. And the resistance is small.
Right.
When shouldn't they have the backing of the Senate?
Like,
shouldn't they have the funding and the power
of the Republic?
Of the whole Republic behind them?
Yes.
They're still the scrappers that they've always been. So it's like,
This is one of the first things. When I saw it the first time, my head just tilted to the side. Because I'm sitting there and I'm reading the thing, from the ashes of the empire have risen, the first order, blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, okay, so this is kind of like a little renegade group on the side that are using the dark force. This makes sense because there's a republic. Now we kind of have a role reversal from 4, 5, and 6, where it was the resistance that was the little scrappy people, and then you had the empire they were fighting against. And the first thing we see is this giant destroyer coming across the face of this planet, and I was like, what?
The role reversal would have made more sense.
Right. And then, then, you know, they have these huge ships, they have all these troops, and they have converted a planet to an entire... And it's like, what? Where did they get these resources from? How does this work? Who's support... How? What? And so that was kind of really the first point that just kind of tweaked my head sideways, and I was trying to figure out how in the world they have enough resources to be able to put this weaponry together. And it didn't make any sense.
Well, and they're like stealing children and reconditioning them. Yeah. It's a big machine. It's a big operation.
It's a big operation, and the manpower required to produce those ships is just enormous.
Well, what you have to, the premise you would have to accept is when it says the ashes of the empire, it's talking about the military side of it. The military side of it split off, and that becomes the First Order. And then the Republic side of it was the planets that they destroyed right at the midway point, whatever it was. So if you accept that, then that kind of makes sense.
Yeah,
but
maybe.
The whole, that it basically remained intact, is that what you're
remained
saying?
Remained intact.
That's that the Empire, yeah, it is. They've
basically
got,
remained intact.
They've got to have an enormous amount of planets and manpower behind them, the First Order. And, but I didn't feel like we were given really any context for that, how powerful the First Order was or what it was. I mean, it's basically just another empire at this point.
Who's the big giant head and where's he at this point?
He's not really going to be giant.
Well, there's some discussion as to whether or not he's big and giant. You know what I didn't check? I didn't check to see how much space we actually have left on this. Oh, okay, we're okay. And the battery's good. Okay, sorry for people listening on headphones. That was weird. So, yeah, that was the first thing that really kind of tweaked my head about the movie. And it really kind of set the tone. For the first time I watched it, I was pretty much unhappy through the whole movie.
It didn't seem to make sense.
Yeah, there were just a bunch of things that didn't seem to make sense. The next thing that tweaked me about the movie was you settle down on this, okay, desert planet. And I thought, oh, this seems familiar. because I don't know if you all noticed, but... There was a lot of, we'll call them homages. There was a lot of homages to 4 in it. A lot of stuff that it's like, I've seen that before. I've seen that before. I've seen that before.
And
I've seen
that before. If they're planning on every year coming out with one of these, they're trying to establish right up front, look, we're committing to the original.
Yeah. Right.
We're committing to the original format, to the original feel. We're not going to, we're going to pretend 1, 2, and 3 didn't happen. We're reestablishing where we're at.
And I think the difference, because J.J. Abrams basically did the same thing with Star Trek.
Yeah.
There was a lot of homages to the original Star Trek, but for me the difference was...
In the first one, though. I mean, in the first one, then he departed.
Yes, then he departed. But I think the difference in the homages to me is that the first one actually was its own plot. But there were stuff is that if you were a Star Trek fan, you saw it and you went, oh, yeah, I get that. Like the red shirt on the shuttle. Everybody knew who was a Star Trek fan. As soon as you saw the shuttle that was going to go to take out the drilling thing and there was a red shirt there, it was like, yeah, that guy's going to die. I mean, everybody knew. And as soon as McCoy says, you know, blanket Jim, I'm none of this, I'm a doctor, you know, it's just like you're right back there with Star Trek. With this one, it was like, oh, they borrowed that idea. Oh, they borrowed that idea.
Rehash.
Oh, it's just a rehash of it. But...
except we'll make it bigger.
Yeah, right. We'll just make it bigger. And then it will be different. And then it will be, you know what? I just got buzzed on my phone just a second because our floor dryer guy... Oh yeah, Fandango wants to know what I thought of the Star Wars thing. Fandango, thank you. Anyways, I think the next thing that they kind of tweaked my head was the fact that I grew up in a scavenger nation. Okay, I grew up in a poor nation where anything that could be recycled would be recycled, period. And so the first thing we see of Ren is she is inside this giant...
Ray,
not Ren. It's Finn and Ren as a couple.
That's a whole different episode.
That's coming. So I see Ray inside one of the star-based star destroyers. And it's mostly intact.
You can still tell what it is.
And it reinforces the fact that this thing is ginormous and it took so much to build. And she's up in there squirreling parts out of it. If there's money to be made on a scavenger planet, it attracts more scavengers. And they're going to be all... And she's the only one there. Like, no one could find this, you know? Yeah. I'm like, what? You know, what?
Small city.
This thing is ginormous. Why isn't anybody else in the side here, you know, tearing stuff apart? And so then I was kind of looking at it like, what? I don't understand this. You know, and then the next thing that came along that tweaked my head, and granted, I have been... Not all of this stuff is original with me because I have been reading reviews and looking and seeing if what bothered me bothered other people. And what I have seen on the reviews and stuff is there's basically two reviews. Either people loved it or there's all these people that are raising their hand and going, what? 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 You know. The next thing that I didn't understand, and maybe you all have a theory. Okay, so she goes, she gets paid for her stuff. She goes back. First of all, she's living in an AT-AT. And again, there's a lot of valuable stuff in there. So why isn't anybody tearing that apart and selling it for parts? So she's living in this. Maybe she staked a claim to it. Okay, that's fine. She hears BB screaming. So she runs over the hill. She sees BB. She hollers, you know, she talks the guy out, she rescues BB, and then she turns her back on BB. And she tells BB, well, the town's that way, just go. Okay, she knows this is a planet filled with scavengers. If she's going to go to all the trouble of rescuing BB, why doesn't she bring him along and take him where he needs to go? And does that make any sense to anybody? Everybody's suddenly very quiet in the car.
I think it would make more sense if she had taken him in and sold him to that guy for 60
bucks. Yeah, maybe.
That would be more in her character as far as a scavenger.
As a scavenger.
Well, but that's not her character.
Yeah, they wanted us that she's the good-hearted scavenger, you know.
Well, she's just buying time till her whatever happens.
Right.
Family comes back.
So whatever. And obviously they haven't closed up that cycle yet, so okay, and hopefully that will explain how she's so strong in the Force, because she must be extraordinarily strong in the Force.
Yeah. To be untrained and yet
right.
Yoda's daughter, she is.
Yeah, she must be. He must have got happy on some planet, and you know, so
she's a genetic experiment.
Right.
Mix Luke and Yoda, and that's how they...
Something.
Or Vader.
Yeah. Because that was a little convoluted.
I figured it's going to come out that she and Ren were cousins.
Yeah.
That she was Mark Hamill. Well, yeah. Not Mark Hamill.
Yeah.
the character he plays, Luke
or
Skywalker.
She was the twin.
Yeah, that's right. She was something. You know, she was something. And there was, I felt like there were pieces of the movie that were just edited out. I felt like there were things in it that they set up to explain stuff, and then it just ended up on the cutting floor, and they thought, well, he didn't need to. Okay, my question, it's test time. Okay, Finn, his name's Finn, right?
Yeah.
The stormtrooper, Finn. Okay. Why did he decide to escape from the Death Star, or from the Star Destroyer?
Didn't want to kill people.
That's what you would think. Any other discussion on the matter?
Well, I took it to mean that this was the first time he was called into service.
Right.
Because he worked sanitation, but to go out and kill people.
Yeah, and that's another huge question in his character. So he works sanitation on this planet. Are they so short-handed for stormtroopers when they leave the huge planet where they had 100,000 troops that they decided, let's take the sanitation workers this time?
You got a promotion.
You know, did his duty. Right. Yeah, that's right. He not only did his duty, he cleaned up everyone else's duty. So somehow he ends up on this team that is supposed to, and he doesn't want to kill people. Now, okay, that's one motivation. But I think they were setting up for yet another motivation. And that is, they realized what he had done, and he didn't want to be set down for whatever they call that, reorganization or, you know, re-education. He didn't want to be sent down for re-education, and he decided now's the time.
I think there was a fear component here.
Yeah, that he had been identified as someone, and he needed to get off the ship. I felt like his motivation for getting off the ship would have been much stronger if he would have admitted that to Poe.
They didn't really have a long time to talk.
No, but there were some quick, you know, when he said, oh, you need a pilot. There could have just right there, bam, bam, do it there. And then it would have kind of tied together. I have to say, I know they had to identify him down on the planet with the bloody handprint on the mask. But that scene, if you watch it closely, and I was watching the second time, the stormtrooper is coming at, he gets shot in the neck, he flips over and falls down, almost dead. Finn runs up to him, and you can see Finn running up to him, and the guy reaches up and he's got blood on his fingers. So, like, maybe, but it doesn't look like there's time to do it, but that's kind of a side issue. Never mind. Okay, so they escape. There's all these little pieces. They escape. They go down to the planet. Poe is absolutely determined that he has got to find BB-8. Absolutely determined. We see him. We think he's dead. The ship goes down.
Yeah, he should have shown back up.
Right.
He just disappears. He doesn't know what's happened to the droid.
He doesn't care, apparently, anymore. You know, he just went away.
Somehow. Or maybe he was looking for the droid, and then the bad people came, and so he ran away just like they ran away.
Right. But none of that is ever explained. It's just dropped. And this was all kind of stuff that was just really bugging me the first time that I watched it.
And you've been waiting 2 weeks to be
I have. I've been waiting 2 weeks to complain about this stuff. Side note here to the listeners, I saw it the Monday before Christmas. Nett and I, my wife, were supposed to see it. What was it, Christmas Day? We're down.
Ah. At the IMAX in Branson.
You tell them.
We got about
18 minutes.
Yeah, theater was sold out. It was 534 seats, sold out. And we got about 15-20 minutes into it.
Yeah, somewhere there.
And there was a glitch, and the projector, the picture, and the sound got off, and there was no way for them to fix it in time for us to be able to watch the whole movie and then have the next showing after us. So they had to refund tickets for all 534 people, which it was a much longer line standing in that than it was to get tickets.
Yes.
So we ended up not seeing it, except for the first.
Did they give you any kind of bonus coupon?
Oh, they did.
Yeah, we got a voucher to go see whatever, whenever. And they also refunded any popcorn, and we didn't buy popcorn or anything like that, but my cousins did. They refunded all the popcorn and drink charges, too. So.
Yeah. And we found out when they were in line, it had happened twice already that week.
What?
Yes.
Yeah, they're losing money like crazy.
I just can't imagine. You know, they have to come out first of all and tell people, you know, sorry, you're not going to see the movie today.
Right.
Oh, yeah. It was a zoo. It would have qualified for Nerd Riot. Have you heard about Nerd Riot? Apparently, there was some digital projector in New York somewhere that they were showing the movie, and like within 15 minutes of the end, the bulb burned out on the projector, and they didn't have another bulb, and they had to come out and tell them, "Well, sorry, that's it." And they said people were throwing stuff at the screen. Anyways.
I think the whole point of this movie was to introduce us to new characters. That was the whole point.
I think it was. But I didn't feel like the movie ever really lit up until the old characters showed up. Like, when Han Solo showed up on the screen, it was just like, oh, okay, finally. Now we've got Star Wars going. You know, and, but there again, the connective tissue. So, okay, they steal the Millennium Falcon, they manage to make it off the planet, and this huge Star Destroyer with all its resources that's hovering right above the planet can't seem to find the Millennium Falcon. Even though it has not jumped to light speed. So, and at the same time, conveniently, Han Solo shows up. After he hasn't been able to find this ship for how many years?
Well, like, they did have a throwaway.
They
if
did have a throwaway.
If they can find it, they'll be able to find
right.
it too.
Yeah, well, why didn't you find it sooner? Because it wasn't flying. Okay, well, okay, maybe, you know. But, I mean, it's those types of things that really tweaked me out.
A lot of times, though, these big epics, there are blaring questions that you just have to ignore.
Yeah,
you just have to suspend your disbelief.
Yeah, I guess I was really hoping that it... I mean, I felt... Maybe I need to go back and watch A New Hope again. But I felt like A New Hope... From what I remember nostalgically about the movie, you know, I felt like A New Hope, you know, that the things set in, that from the opening credits when they talked about the Empire and the Resistance and all those things, that it was immediately identifiable as a universe. And you just went, oh, yeah, okay, that makes sense. You know, and in this one, from the opening credits, like you were saying just a few minutes ago, the Resistance. What is the role of the Resistance? Why is it called the Resistance? What's its relationship with the Republic? You know, it's just, there's weirdness, and it was hard to kind of lock together exactly how things
well,
were.
Well, if you hadn't had New Hope in your brain, A New Hope, like, you don't have the history of that.
Yeah.
Then maybe it's easier. Because maybe you're fighting with why is this so similar to...
Okay. My question, another question. Where did Leia send Ren off to?
At the
Skywalker school. Jedi school.
To Jedi school.
Blew up
okay.
Jedi
okay.
school.
Oh, okay.
And then Luke ran away.
Okay.
Right? Was he the student? I'm assuming they
didn't
tie
that
together.
Yeah, I guess.
But I'm assuming
that,
he was the student that... That blew up the school.
Oh, I didn't make that connection.
Yeah, okay. I would think that's a fairly good guess. That's somehow...
Well, I would think, yeah, because family member doing that would hurt him more and probably send him into isolation quicker than just some random student.
Right.
So that does make sense.
And, you know, that is one thing about this movie, that one reviewer said that the thing about this movie was that it forever destroyed the hero epic right. of Luke and Leia and Han Solo.
Oh, it just undercut them.
Because they ended on a high note.
Right.
And then all of a sudden you're back where you started.
Right.
And well, then, and they're just human. They're just... Right.
You know, and they couldn't stay, you know, Leia and Han Solo couldn't stay together. Luke is screwed up again, you know, and he's off in a pout somewhere, apparently, off in a pout somewhere. You know, that, oh, I'm so bad, I just can't do this.
On top
you
of
know.
A lot of stairs.
On top of a lot of stairs.
Which is part of his punishment when he has to go to the grocery store.
Right. So walk down all the stairs.
Lugging all the groceries. The
count the stairs, Luke. You know, Okay, we're going to pause for a minute.
You can keep recording.
No.
I need to go check.
Okay, yeah, we got a bunch of people that need to check things. So we're going to pause for a minute. We are at Praise Assembly. It looks like your guy is right by the car here.
Well, I'm going to have to go in anyway.
Okay, all right, cool. So we're pausing as soon as we get stopped. Is this your buddy? And pausing now. Okay, so we're back. We're back. We have checked on things that needed to be checked on. We have brought out supplies that need to be brought out. We're actually heading home, so it's another 10 minutes here before we actually get home. But somehow I think we'll fill it up. Anyway, so we were talking about the fact that this movie, one of the things that it does is it really undercuts the hero epic. Of Luke Skywalker and Leia Organa and Han Solo. Because when we left them, you know, everything was hunky-dory fine, and then we find out that, you know, in the I think it's 30 years, right? 30 years?
Did they ever say?
It's 30 years, but yeah. They didn't say.
They didn't say, but that's what I've read, that it's supposed to be 30 years. Which, might I say, that Mark Hamill has not aged well. But anyway... I mean, he looks pretty rough. Of course,
the only one who really has aged well is Harrison Ford.
Yeah.
They just made Leia Organa lose a bunch of weight.
Right. That's funny. Have you seen the interviews with, oh, she's a scream, Carrie Fisher. You should watch some of the interviews with Carrie Fisher. She doesn't give a rat's behind about anything in the interviews. She just doesn't care. At one point... people say, so you lost a lot of weight? Oh, yeah, I don't want to talk about that. That's boring. You know, I mean, she just... and she brings her dog on these interviews.
Tongue
is hanging out the whole time. That's what he felt like after he watched the movie. You know, his tongue's hanging out.
I saw that one.
Yeah, it's just hysterical. She's hysterical. I love Carrie Fisher because she just doesn't care. She supposedly went up to the new gal. I don't know what her real name is. Ray. And she told her, don't ever let them put you in a bikini. So, you know. So, although I have done a little research on that, and there has been some footage that has surfaced from one of the ad campaigns, either footage or pictures, I don't know, of Leia in the slave girl outfit frolicking in an ocean somewhere, smiling at the camera and all this kind of stuff. It's like, okay, what movie did this come from? You know, so obviously you weren't too sad about the bikini, you know, or you just did what people told you to do.
Okay, were you aware of a Christmas special?
There is a Christmas special.
Once? Okay.
They say it's one of the worst things ever.
I saw previews of it. Somebody had posted it on Facebook.
They posted little bits.
Yeah.
What was in it?
Yeah.
And I've got to see it now. It's so horrible.
Yeah.
I've got to see it.
I know. We got to find it somewhere so we can watch it. It's out there somewhere, I'm sure.
Okay, so coming back to it.
Right.
I think you've got two responses. And yours, I'm okay with a little, I mean, you're a nitpicker.
So I am a nitpicker.
But I think really what it comes down to is the two possible responses are, number one, it reminds me of that nostalgia of the initial movie. It brings me back to when I saw the first one in the first theater, and it has the same story. I mean, essentially, it's the exact same story
right.
as number four.
Right.
They blow up the Death Star in the end, which is bigger.
Uh-huh.
You know,
the Starbase killer.
Yeah. And then the other response is that, well, wait a second, what happened to 4, 5, and 6? I thought that they won.
Right.
But here they are back exactly where they began.
Right.
So, I mean, to me, I think he was deliberate in trying to recapture the nostalgia of the first one. Well, you can't recapture the nostalgia of the first one unless the good guys are scrappy and unless the bad guys are all powerful.
Right.
And the good guys win anyways.
And the good guys win anyways somehow, because the bad guys never learn their lesson that they can spend decades building these massive weapons, but they always forget there's some port somewhere that if somebody puts something down, it'll blow the whole thing up. It's like the bad guys never figure it out. And there were other things that really bugged me, since we've got another 5 minutes. There were other things that really bugged me about this. One was the fact that the production stills leading up to this movie featured characters that gave you this idea that they were going to have some kind of role in this movie. Like the Flame Trooper. I don't know if you've seen the Flame Trooper. There was a production, you know, I have the Flamethrower. The Flame Trooper was in the movie for like 2 seconds. And it's just like, oh, well, we'll be able to sell another action figure out of this.
Well, same with the other. I thought the trooper with the
We have never seen that thing before.
What was that?
That was some kind of electrostatic. You know, and he just.
That's
he
Disney.
Yeah.
They're not thinking about the movie. They're
no.
thinking about the licensing.
Yeah. And he's like the only guy we ever saw with one of those things, and he just happens to be by Finn, who has a lightsaber. It's like, oh.
Well, because a lightsaber, if you're not trained in the Force, a lightsaber's not much good against a blaster.
Right. Right. And so this guy, though, conveniently, you know, throws down his lightsaber because, oh, I have a chance to pull out my little wang, wang, wang thing, you know, and fight with this guy. It's like, just shoot him. You know, it's an Indiana Jones thing. But the other thing that I was kind of gripey about is that I have been waiting for months now to see Gwendolyn Christie as Captain Phasma. Okay, Gwendolyn Christie is like this 6'3" Amazon who rose to great fame in many things, including Game of Thrones. So she's like, I've never seen Game of Thrones, so I can't say for sure. But I think she's like some chief guardian for some king in Game of Thrones. And she is like this fighter. You know, I mean, she has that reputation. And they specifically cast her to be in the silvery, right, you know, with the cape over her shoulder, you know, be in the silvery role to be this leader of the stormtroopers.
Oh, that's her. Okay.
That was Gwendolyn Christie, the female voice.
She didn't even take her...
Nothing. She never takes her helmet off.
Her part is minimal.
Her part is minimal, and she surrenders immediately and drops the shields.
I thought it was a high-pitched guy.
Yeah.
I really did.
That was really disappointing. And she lowers the shields, and nobody seems to notice.
Yeah.
You know.
There were no alarms that went off anywhere.
No alarms go off. It's just like, oh, they're coming in past the shields. No one, nobody notices this.
I don't think that she, I don't know. I can't, if she's a die-hard stormtrooper, which I would imagine someone that they make captain is a die-hard
You would think so.
Would not just acquiesce to a gun pointed at her head. Like,
right. This didn't make any sense. Now, supposedly, in the novel, a lot of these questions about the movie supposedly are resolved in the novel, which is really interesting to me. Because either the novelist read the script and said, what? And went back to them and said, what about this? 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 And they were like, yeah, just fix it. And so they fixed it in the novel. Or they already knew there were the kind of these gaping holes. And they kind of said, okay, when you do the novel, make sure you put in this line. 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 Because one of the things that they didn't explain very well was when the Starbase killer fires its weapon, you see the stuff going out, and eventually it destroys the Republic headquarters. I read one reviewer that said, well, is the Starbase, is that all in the same system?
Yeah. What are the distances that we're talking about?
How did this do this?
Yeah.
In fact, there's a throwaway line about supra light weapon, blah, 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 that apparently this thing can fire a supra light weapon that actually can travel at high speed, you know, make its own warp jump, or it's not called warp jump, whatever it's called, and destroy planets. Now, the problem is Han Solo and Rey and Finn are off on this backwards planet meeting with whatever the lady's name from the cantina was. Oh, wait, it's not the cantina. It's something else. But it really is the cantina. The problem is even if you accept that, they look up in the sky and see the planets being destroyed.
Yeah.
And so there's all this connective tissue in it. But anyways, we're almost home now. We'll write it up. Let me just give you the last thing that I knew was a problem the first time I saw it. And that was...
We got to do final thoughts from everybody.
But and I felt like the big problem right at the beginning is when Poe shoots at Kylo Ren. You know, Kylo Ren kills the guy. Poe shoots at him. And after he shoots at them, Kylo Ren goes boom and stops the blaster. And there's that big dramatic scene where we see the blaster, you know, okay. And as soon as I saw it, I thought, oh, that's a problem. Because this is a guy then who's like really almost all powerful.
Invincible.
Who has reflexes faster than the speed of light.
Mm-hmm.
And sure enough, at the end of the movie, Chewbacca shoots him and kills him. Now, you could say, well, he was torn up over his dad, blah, 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 blah. But we don't see that level of power in the second half of the movie. You do in the first half, and then all of a sudden he kind of loses that.
Yeah.
And
well,
he can't...
And he's just weak, and he's fearful, and he's...
And he's whiny. Anyway, oh, and the final thing that really bugged me is, what is with the hair? He has this big, fluffy hair that hits him at the shoulders, but when he puts on his helmet, suddenly it's gone. Does he use the force to pull it up into the helmet? You know, I don't understand this. Anyways, okay, final thoughts.
It's the curtain roll.
Yeah, final thoughts.
That was your final thought.
No, that is, I get the final thought because it's my podcast. Nick, any final thoughts?
It's a long movie.
And she had to pee for the last hour of it. It's like, come on, finish the movie.
I had trouble concentrating a little bit.
All right, Alan.
All I could think through the whole movie is, I wonder where J.J. Abrams is putting all his money. Like, is it a room in his house that he's just stocking it in? And what is he doing right now? Is he just watching the numbers climb?
They must, because you know he gets a percentage cut.
Man, he's making bank.
Yeah, making bank.
I think if I felt about Star Wars the way that I feel about Star Trek, it would have been an entirely different experience for me.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think for me, having seen it the second time now, I actually get both opinions, both of the big opinions. There are people out there, there's a little editorial cartoon I've seen about this adult guy walking into the Star Wars movie, and then you see him walking out, except now he's a little kid.
Mm.
I get that. I get that. Now that I've seen it the second time, I get that. Plus, I get all the people that are going, what happened? Why don't we, you know, because when you see it the second time, for me, as I was watching it the second time, and right before I went into it, I was thinking, you know, you need to approach this like a comic book. That it has all these great, cute set pieces. J.J. Abrams said that he wanted the movie to be delightful. And there are lots of places in the movie where it is delightful.
Yeah.
Cool scenes, cool visuals, fun banter. Some things that are ridiculous and don't make any sense. You mean to tell me after 19 years or 29 years of being together or 35 years of Han Solo and Chewbacca being together, he never shot Chewbacca's bow weapon. I mean, really.
Yeah.
You know, that didn't make any sense. But it's delightful. And so you have all these really cute things like you have in a comic book or a graphic novel where they're just really cool visuals and they're delightful scenes. But the connective tissue, you just really can't think too hard about the connective tissue. Because if you do, your head just kind of tilts to the side and things start not making sense. So I think what's happening for the people who really, really enjoy the movie is they're just reveling in those delightful moments. And then for the other people, they're just really wanting the universe to be whole. And it's not yet. And maybe it will be in the future. This is Phil Ferrand. And Lynette.
Lynette Ferrand.
And
Beauchamp.
And
Liz Beauchamp.
And we have made it home.